Roughly Speaking with Dan Rodericks is brought to you by United Way. Whether it's helping a single mom in Dundalk keep her home or giving a bright student in Sandtown a chance to be his best, United Way fights for families. Help them win the fight. Visit uwcm.org/fight.
From the Baltimore Sun, I'm Dan Rodericks, Sun columnist, and this is episode 451 of the Roughly Speaking podcast, my first episode of 2019. My contributions to the podcast will be reduced this year as I'm stepping away a bit to concentrate more on writing and reporting and commentary for the Sun. During the next 3 months, the run of the 2019 Maryland General Assembly session, you can get updates on news from Annapolis on Roughly Speaking. Sun reporter Luke Broadwater and Malia Cromer, director of the Goucher Poll, are teaming up to file reports each week. So be listening for the government edition of Roughly Speaking. The first episode is online now. My show today is about a popular Baltimore restaurant company and the part it plays in giving refugees a new start. Ned Atwater opened his first establishment 20 years ago, and now there are six Atwaters around Baltimore: Belvedere Square, Catonsville, one on Falls Road in Baltimore County, one in Canton, in Kenilworth, and one in East Baltimore at a Johns Hopkins location, all serving coffee, tea, pastries, sandwiches, soup, salads, and lots of other good eats. Until a few years ago, the staff at each Atwater's prepared food for the day. Now all that is done in a centralized kitchen in southwest Baltimore. The Big Kitchen, they call it.
We're in a beautiful old building. It's called the Schneiderite Building, after the printing company, which is a Baltimore institution. And we're in Morrill Park, southwest edge of Baltimore City at the far end of Washington Boulevard. And we've been here for about 4 years. We do all of our main cooking at this in this building, in our big kitchen here, for our locations. So we bake bread, make pies, cookies. We make jam, soup, chicken salad, cheese. So we do all those things here now.
And some of the workers who do all that cooking are refugees who came to America from different countries where they face dangers, from the turmoil of civil war to religious persecution.
If you're an employer, hire refugees.
That is David Miliband, the president of the International Rescue Committee, giving a TED Talk about the global refugee crisis in 2017. At the time, the United Nations estimated that there were some 65 million displaced people in the world. That number has climbed since then.
The causes of this are deep. Weak states that can't support their own people, an international political system weaker than at any time since 1945, and differences over theology, governance, engagement with the outside world in significant parts of the Muslim world. Now, those are long-term, generational challenges. That's why I say that this refugee crisis is a trend and not a blip. And it's complex. And when you have big, large, long-term, complex problems, people think nothing can be done. When Pope Francis went to Lampedusa off the coast of Italy in 2014, he accused all of us of what he called the globalization of indifference. It's a haunting phrase. It means that our hearts have turned to stone. But I think it's not right. I think people do want to make a difference, but they just don't know whether there are any solutions to this crisis. And what I want to tell you today is that though the problems are real, the solutions are real too. Solution one: these refugees need to get into work in the countries where they're living, and the countries where they're living need massive economic support. In Uganda in 2014, they did a study. 80% of refugees in the capital city, Kampala, needed no humanitarian aid because they were working. They were supported into work.
About 3 years ago, Ned Atwater and the International Rescue Committee here in Baltimore connected. And Atwater's was soon putting refugees to work, making soup, baking cookies. The workers were refugees from such places as Pakistan, Afghanistan, and the Central African Republic. So how did that start? How did you establish a relationship with IRC? Did you need help or did you want to help them?
I think it started with us needing to have positions filled. And one of the people that was in our orbit said, there's a grow house in Highland Town that has an organization that helps place refugees into employment. We just contacted them and sat down with them, and it seemed like it was great because we had hired a lot of people that were immigrants and varying success, and a couple of the hurdles the IRC already had in place. So right off the bat, we knew it was a great organization that could help, and we could help by employing their folks.
And what have the folks from IRC done for you, these refugees?
Well, just about everything. So oftentimes it's an entry-level job, which in a space like this is either prepping, cleaning, washing dishes, and those sorts of things. Some of them continue to wash dishes. Some of them now make our Scottish pies. Some of them work in the pastry department making apple pies. Some of them are in the packing department. So different jobs.
Have you personally gotten to know any of them?
I feel like I know them, but only to a degree. You know, there is still a certain language and cultural barrier, but I feel like we've gotten to know them fairly well, you know, where they come from, some of their family history. In some cases, I don't want to pry into their history. Some of them, I'm sure it's very painful, and some are willing to share, and some you could tell they'd rather not talk about it. Some have been here for a couple years, and we just had one of the staff people come back. She worked for us for about, Taekwon worked for us for about a year, and then her husband got sick, and she had to stay home with him for about 6 months, 8 months. And then she just came back to work. But it's a very, you know, steady group. But as with any person, they want to improve their livelihood and maybe in their career that they've had prior to coming to this country. So there's a fair amount of people moving on from here, but there's also people that stay here. So if they came from Afghanistan, Iran, Pakistan, with a skill that they could translate easier after becoming established, then we wish them the best and they go on to that field. If they don't and they wish to stay or they can't find something, there's other barriers out there that they'll stay here a little bit longer. One of the gentlemen, Janice, who was born and raised in the Afghanistan-Pakistan border, I have gotten to talk to him a little bit. He speaks very good English, so it's easier to have a conversation and ask questions. So I did know about his family, but the person that I've asked the most questions to is actually Javed, who's the interpreter, which is another great thing that the IRC does. He'll come here at any time to help to resolve any kind of a conflict or just to, you know, communicate better. So I've actually had the longest conversations with him and found out that he was an interpreter for the U.S. Army for about a long time, like 5 years, 6 years. Went on, you know, hundreds of missions with soldiers to help to interpret them. And then when he wanted to come to this country with his family, he wasn't given much help. In fact, his family is still there. They're still in Afghanistan. And I really, you know, that was really shocking to hear that. This guy gave, you know, years of his life and risked his life, I'm sure, hundreds of times. And then he asked something in return and we're not there for him. It's kind of weird.
That's not all that's weird these days when it comes to the United States and refugees. One of the first things the Trump administration did was pull back drastically on the country's willingness to take in refugees, many of them displaced by the ongoing Syrian civil war. Trump has set an annual refugee limit of 30,000, and that's the lowest ceiling a president has placed on the refugee program since its creation 40 years ago. Of course, this is all part of Trump's general clampdown on people seeking to come to the United States, including those asking for asylum.
The United States will not be a migrant camp, and it will not be a refugee holding facility. Won't be. You look at what's happening in Europe, you look at what's happening in other places, we can't allow that to happen to the United States, not on my watch.
The most vulnerable refugees need to be given a new start and a new life in a new country, including in the West. The numbers are relatively small, hundreds of thousands, not millions. But the symbolism is huge. Now is not the time to be banning refugees, as the Trump administration proposed. It's a time to be embracing people who are victims of terror. And remember, refugees seeking sanctuary have seen the West as a source of hope and a place of haven. They've come to the West for safety. We throw that away at our peril.
At the International Rescue Committee in Baltimore, the idea is to help refugees who do gain entry get established and find employment. Mary Riqueza is an employment specialist at IRC, and she met me at Atwater's Big Kitchen.
For newly arrived refugees, they go to our early employment specialist, and we do intakes with them to learn about their past work experience, their language abilities, and also discuss any barriers they might have to employment. And then we make a plan with them to see how we're either going to overcome them or refer them to a different service within our office. We also provide job readiness trainings to every client before they start work. So in about 2.5 hours of a training, they'll go over taxes, job interview preparation, how to fill out an application, how to communicate with an employer, standard like days off or holidays, what that looks like, and how to review a pay stub, because pay stubs are something that can be quite foreign and new as well. And of course, it's in their language with other speakers of that language. And then we go through the job search process. So we have a lot of great established relationships like this one with Atwater's. And then we just see where they live, kind of what their public transportation or if they have a car, English ability. And we try to match them up with the best employer to get to that self-sufficiency. So we try to do a good sort through our clients' skills before we refer them to an employer. So if I know someone lives on the west side, they maybe have a bike and they can get here to Atwater's, that would be a good option. But if we have someone who lives over on the east side, I may not refer them because I don't know if they'll be able to get to work every day, but I want to make sure my relationship with the employer is strong and make sure I refer someone to them who will be able to come to work on time and who I can vouch for and say, yeah, they're going to be a good worker. Some employers we work with provide transportation from like neighborhoods that have very large refugee population, but we really try to instill self-reliance and teaching our clients how to live without IRC. Our goal is to have them be self-sufficient and be able to take care of themselves and their family after their services are done with us.
It might be tempting to put people by country together at a workplace, but it doesn't sound like you do that.
We do. Because it can make it easier also for a sense of community, for people to feel safer, to be able to communicate. But then we do also have clients who say, I want to work with Americans. I want to be able to speak English. I don't want to work with everyone from Congo. I want to work with someone who I can practice English with. So that can be a challenge, trying to find employers who are willing to work with low English, where they have a largely English-speaking staff, because sometimes it doesn't always match up. So it can be a good thing, and then it can also provide a challenge to those clients who are really wanting to improve and wanting to be around Americans and practice their language. Because a lot of our clients, like currently, are coming from the DRC and Eritrea, for example. So it's just kind of going to be natural that a lot of the employers we refer them to, they're just going to be going to the same places around the same time.
As an employer, I find it's very helpful, because they really help one another. It's really great because the one who may have been working for 6 months knows some English, and the brand new folks come in, they can really help each other. It really goes a long way to have them comfortable. Whereas if they were from different countries and different languages, it would actually be a barrier. So it is helpful.
A short break on Roughly Speaking, and then Ned Atwater will give us a tour of the Big Kitchen and the Big Kitchen Farm out back. And we'll meet some of the refugees who work there.
Roughly Speaking with Dan Rodericks is brought to you by United Way. From housing and education to healthcare and employment, they will help you fight to make the biggest difference in your community. Join the fight at uwcm.org/fight.
This is not just a crisis, it's a test. It's a test that civilizations have faced down the ages. It's a test of our humanity. It's a test of us in the Western world, of who we are and what we stand for. It's a test of our character, not just our policies. And refugees are a hard case. They do come from faraway parts of the world. They have been through trauma. They're often of a different religion. Those are precisely the reasons we should be helping refugees, not a reason not to help them. And it's a reason to help them because of what it says about us. It's revealing of our values. Empathy and altruism are two of the foundations of civilization, fail to help, and we show we have no moral compass at all.
While the Trump administration severely restricts the number of refugees offered protection here and tries to close some of the narrow legal pathways for migrants to make their way into the United States, some Americans, more generous and open-minded, offer to help those who are trying to start a new life here. One of the employers of refugees in the Baltimore area is Atwater's Restaurants. Ned Atwater showed us around his centralized kitchen, as well as the greenhouse out back, and we met some of his staff along the way, including his cookie baker, Marceline Ndekua, from the Central African Republic.
We have six locations feeding, you know, a couple thousands of people, so that's all starts here. We don't do any wholesale, really. We do farmers markets still.
Like, but how many cookies are we talking about?
How many cookies? Wow.
Okay, so if Ned Atwater doesn't know, somebody must know. Somebody who works for you probably knows, right? What is this?
This is our cheesemaking room. Yes, so it's actually...
Blessed are the cheesemakers.
Yes, yes. It's actually quiet right now, partly because I'm the cheesemaker. I had an assistant who left us, but I broke my leg, so I haven't been able to do anything. So we're going to pick this up again probably in March.
I was going to ask you why you're on crutches. Do you want to tell us how you broke your leg, Ned, or is that...
A little bicycle crash.
Oh, yeah.
A couple weeks ago.
Oh, I'm sorry
and
to hear that.
And I broke my femur, so I have like three big long screws holding the top of my leg together.
Oh, jeez. Let's take our time walking.
It's been a couple weeks. I'm on these things.
You have quite a collection of framed T-shirts in this hallway.
This is the history of the company.
It basically is.
Yes, it is.
The history of Atwater's in T-shirts all the way down this hallway. It's kind of cool.
So this is the savory department. So there's our soup kettles. We make all the soup here and then bag it and chill it in that chill tank. So that goes out every day. We make four soups every day here.
What do you think they're making today?
Actually, David just went in the walk-in. Here's our main soup maker. But a vegan, a vegetarian, a meat soup, and a seafood soup. So it changes every day. So
four big pots.
Yeah.
And six locations.
Right. Yeah.
And when does that go out? So I'm meeting you and Mary at 10 o'clock in the morning, 10:15.
Everything we're doing today is for tomorrow morning. So our driver comes in around 1 in the morning. All this is all labeled, packed, staged in the back walk-in, and he just picks it up and goes. So
you used to always do this in the back of each house, right?
Right, right. So it's a big change. More efficient. You know, we have the overhead of the building, of course, so it's probably a wash, but... Anyway, more efficient, better quality this way.
And you have some IRC workers here?
Yes. So let's go back here because...
Busy place. Lots of trays, lots of racks, lots of muffin trays.
Marcelina is from the IRC. So she works in the pastry department. She works in the dish station.
By the way, what are they making over there?
Linzer tort. You know, a mixture of berries, an almond crust, nut crust.
So we're getting a sort of tour of the Atwater's operation here and seeing some of the IRC folks at work.
Taekwam, she's from Eritrea. She has been here for about a year and a half, 2 years. She's the one who left to take care of her husband. Now she's back. But she's making all of our Scottish pies, our chicken pot pies.
Oh, and I see trays of biscotti. That makes me happy.
There you go. Huh? Janice from Pakistan-Afghanistan border. You know Mary?
I can't shake your hand. I'm Dan Rodericks from the Baltimore Sun, doing an interview with Ned.
Okay, sure.
Yeah. Nice to meet you. What are you making?
I'm making crackers, local crackers, to trade. So then we're going to cook for 20 minutes, and when we get ready, yeah, for people to eat and buy and enjoy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's in those crackers, Ned?
That's local rye flour, caraway seeds, kosher salt.
Yeah. So Janice is your cracker man?
Yep.
Okay. Looks like someone's working some dough over here. You must need that person.
That's Jose. He's from...
You must need that person.
That's right. Sorry.
Where's Jose from?
He is from Honduras, but he's not in the IRC program. He's on his own. His own program.
Good. I smell some chocolate, don't you? Yeah. Mary, smell that?
Oh, yeah.
Marcelina, how many cookies will you cook today? How many cookies will you bake today?
For everything?
Yeah.
318.
So
we're looking at a clipboard here.
288 walnut, 318 chocolate chip, 232 gingerbread, 274 Mexican, 178 oatmeal. Yeah, so it's quite a bit.
And Marceline is in charge of all of that?
Reads the production sheet, organizes how many to go on the thing, bakes them, brings them back to cool, and packages them.
Marceline, where are you from?
I'm from Republic Central Africa. Central Africa Republic.
And how long have you been in the United States?
America, yeah. 2 years.
You like making cookies?
Yes, yes.
She has a nice smile. All right. Where to now, Ned? On the back lot of Atwater's Big Kitchen is the Big Kitchen Farm, greenhouses full of lettuce in different stages of growth. So when you were looking for this place, you needed to find a place that had also room out back for the greenhouses.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So lots of lettuce, I imagine.
That's what we focus on because that's something that we know we have a constant use of. And it's actually getting much better, the quality of lettuce that you can buy. But it used to be the quality of lettuce wasn't very good. But now there's that big operation going in down into Trade Point. That's going to be producing a ton of lettuce.
Wow. Oh, it's nice and warm in here, Mary. Hey, Ned, this looks great.
And that's,
wow.
Well, on that side, we start all the lettuce from seed in those trays. And then this is like a three-week rotation of lettuces. That's.
I was going to ask you how long it is. 3 weeks?
Yeah, it depends. Like, this takes a little longer. This might take 5 weeks.
What is that over there? Want to identify it?
Kale. Mm-hmm. You know, like a Russian red kale, I think. Arugula. There's some romaine down there. Red leaf, bib.
Wow, this is great. You keep this going all year?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He has the doors open today because if these doors were closed, it would be like 100 degrees in here right now.
Yeah.
With no artificial heat, just from the sunlight.
If you're an employer, hire refugees. The duty to strangers shows itself in small ways and big, prosaic and heroic. This refugee crisis is manageable, not unsolvable. And each one of us has a personal responsibility to help make it so. Because this is about the rescue of us and our values, as well as the rescue of refugees and their lives. Thank you very much indeed.
David Miliband is the president of the International Rescue Committee. We've been listening to excerpts from his 2017 TED Talk on the refugee crisis. Ned Atwater is the founder and owner of the 6 Atwater's restaurants in the Baltimore area, and Mary Riqueza is an employment specialist with the IRC in Baltimore. More information about Atwater's and the IRC employment program can be found in the notes with this episode of the show. I'm Dan Rodericks at the Baltimore Sun. For my trusty and skilled producers, Steve Early and Hallie Miller, thanks for listening to Roughly Speaking and for supporting the Baltimore Sun.
Roughly Speaking with Dan Rodericks is brought to you by the Ivy Bookshop, an independent bookstore at Falls Road and Lake Avenue in Baltimore. The Ivy stocks a wide selection of books covering Baltimore and the Chesapeake Bay region, many by local authors. Located at 6080 Falls Road, more information can be found at theivybookshop.com or by calling 410-377-2966.